Thought for the day. A broad mind lacks focus. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Thursday, December 12th. This is episode 59, December 12th, 2019. Excuse me, there's more than one December 12th in all of existence and time, because that's how time works. So, I just wanted to, before we get into anything, this episode is going to be a bit shorter. But B, part of that was because I was recording something else, and to be perfectly honest, I just wasn't happy with it. So I'm going to do a shorter episode since this is on an off day situation and stuff because of my work schedule getting fucked up earlier this week. But I said I wanted to put an episode out, and I'm sticking to it. My original plan was to delve more into the Adepta Sororitas book, which I'm going to discuss that in a moment too. But I just felt like I wasn't doing it justice and stuff as it stood. So I decided, fuck it, I'm going to do a shorter episode today, to discuss a few things. I still might discuss a little bit of the book. Just once again, felt like I was not doing it right, wasn't doing it justice, and would rather put out a shorter episode and stuff today. And try to kind of go back at it on Tuesday and stuff. There's just a lot to cover with this book, for starters. Just like this week, the whole random work schedule thing with the work meeting just kind of threw me off. Sleep schedule's been a little funky. I don't want to skip a week. I want to make sure I get something out this week, but I would rather do a shorter episode that's a little bit more, refined or whatever, a little bit more focused on stuff to discuss rather than, kind of just haphazardly shit my way through the book. But like I said, we'll probably discuss a small part of it, the book, at least for right now, and stuff, as far as what's going on in my neck of the woods, like I said, work got a little weird and fucky earlier this week, kind of threw everything off, unfortunately. It is what it is. Should only affect this week because it was just a meeting thing that we had to do for insurance crap or whatever. So that just kind of threw shit off. Which actually, speaking of work though, too, I had plans to purchase a few new models for my Bone Reapers army that I'm building for AOS after I got paid this past weekend. My paycheck got really fucked over, and I'm not going to get into the weeds on it, but needless to say, the way that the powers that be handled some stuff, there's nothing I could do about fixing the paycheck because it's bonus related, but the way the powers that be decided to handle it was pretty shady and shitty. But I already talked to people that are of importance, and they already said it's only for the 1 month because of some stuff that happened. Part of the problem, what makes it extra shitty, is really good things happen for the company, but it caused some confusion that caused them to decide to take an approach that resulted in basically a better part of a paycheck just up and not existing. So, very frustrating. And like I said, there's nothing I can do about it. But anywho, I don't want to fully get into it. But needless to say, it fucks with my hobbying stuff because I had plans. I don't need that much more to have like a small starter army for the Bone Reapers, but I need a couple things. We have this, you know, Kristen and I have this tournament on the 21st that we want to go to. It's a doubles tournament, but it requires you to be part of the same alliance. So she's got Nighthawk. I want to do Bone Reapers. We may end up just going ahead and rolling dual Nighthaunt. We could do dual Chaos, but I would rather that, you know, I would be fine jumping into something I'm a little less familiar with. But for her sake, I think comfort-wise, it would be her first tournament and everything too. So I think it would be better to just go ahead and me stick with the Nighthaunt for her sake. So, but we'll see. We'll see. But on that note, her and I, well, for starters, I played a game for the first time in a while. She also played a game for the first time in a while. We played a game together for the first time in a long while. Since the whole moving thing, neither of us had really managed to do much gaming-wise and stuff. And it had been a while since she'd even played before that. But we played a game together. We did 1,000 points. 980, I think, is what it came out to. I had to proxy some models in for what I was doing, but Bone Reapers versus Nighthaunt. I did not do any of the Petrifex Elite or any of that crap. Just decided to, because I was still learning the army and stuff. In hindsight, probably should have done something like that because I got raffle stomped hardcore. It was goddamn embarrassing to some degree. And not because I'm saying, well, she shouldn't be beating me because I'm awesome and she sucks. No, I'm just saying, like, I was like, wow, I made some mistakes for sure. But damn, at the same time, that girl just destroyed me. So, I don't remember the name of the mission type. I think it's Total Conquest was the mission we were doing. The battle plan, I think they call it, in AOS. And, she had, we had to capture objectives. And each turn you controlled an objective, and it went turn by turn, not round. At the end of your turn, you score up your points. And you get 1 point for each victory point you hold. Your opponent, if you take a victory point that turn from your opponent, you get 2 victory points for it for that turn. So if you still control it on your next turn, you only get 1. But the turn you steal it, you get 2. We made it to turn 3, I think it was, before I just called it. Like I said, I got fucking wrecked. At first, it looked like it was going to be kind of like a tight situation and stuff. She got double turned. She got double turned first, and then she got first turn on the third round. It did not go great in those regards. I will say, Lady Olander, holy mother of fucks. Her and I played games before where she used Lady O, but Lady O got, just totally murdered before she was able to do anything before. I just basically alpha striked right on her and killed her and it was done. Boom, done. Lady O is dead. So, Krista screened her this time. She put a block of chain rasps, 20 chain rasps in front of her, and right off the bat, I was like, I gotta take out Lady O. So I charged up with my Morghast Archives and figured, alright, I gotta chop through these chain rasps and shit, but I will do so. I did not do so. I did actually do some decent work to the chain rasps. I really did at first. But Lady O pumps out such a ridiculous amount of mortal wounds. It's scary. Alright. If you play Nighthaunt and you're not using Lady O, I feel like you're making a mistake. Immensely a mistake. because that is one scary bitch. Just no. And I'm not saying that she's just totally OP and that's the only reason Krista won. Krista played things really fucking smart. Between the way she screened things out with her chain rasps, and the way her she waited until turn three to drop in her Mirmorn Banshees. And I left too many I didn't just leave openings, but I was losing so much shit that I couldn't cover everything appropriately. Banshees drop in, take objectives, she racks up a fuck ton of points, and I almost didn't even play out my turn three. But I was like, turn three or four. I think, I don't remember which turn now that I think about it. But either way, I almost didn't play it out. I was almost like, there's no fucking point. Like, there's just not a fucking point to me doing this. Yeah, you know what? It was my turn three because she got double turn on for round two. She ended round one. She started round two and then she started round three. And yeah, so my turn three, I was like, I don't even know if I should bother. But I was like, you know what? Small chance. Try rolling it out. Did my rolls. Nothing fucking happened. It was like, yeah, there's no, it's not happening. I had two blocks of 10 Mortec Guard with Vokmortian, a Bone Shaper, three Necropolis Stalkers, and two Morghast Archives. She was running Lady O, two blocks of 20 Chain Rasps, Guardian of Souls with a Nightmare Lantern, 10 Grimghast Reapers, and two blocks of four Mirmorn Banshees. If I remember correctly, that was her whole list. So yeah. But yeah, she, like I said, she played shit really smart. And like her Chain Rasps, like, Lady O was mega nasty powerful. But I honestly think at the end of the day, her chain rasps were MVP for sure. Because had she not used them to screen properly and everything else, I would have killed Lady O and just been able to just start running roughshod all over her shit. And instead, she bogged me down. Gave Lady O the opportunity. Lady O killed a shit ton of shit with her mortal wounds. She, between her and the Chain Rasps, the Morghast Archives, dead. Mortec Guard got, one of the blocks of Mortec Guard got absolutely wrecked. It was just, like I said, it was just holy shit. On the other end of things, on the other side of the field, her other block of Chain Rasps tied up my Necropolis Stalkers from turn one on. The whole fucking game, they were tied up. They could not do jack shit. And she got some really good charge rolls. So the Nighthaunt have the Wave of Terror rule, where if you roll a natural 10, you know, if you roll a 10 on your charge or better, you get a free round of combat before the combat phase even starts. It's still in the charge phase, to my understanding. That's the way we played it out. So basically, turn one, I had already moved my Necropolis Stalkers up with the intention of going after one of her objectives and shit. She, on her turn one, she charges her Chain Rasps, rolls, I don't remember exactly what, but it was at least a 10. So she gets the Wave of Terror. Now, the Necropolis Stalkers have a rule that states, let's see, it's part of their aspect. And it says, at the start of each combat phase, you must pick one of the following aspects for this unit. The rule for that aspect applies to this unit until the end of that phase. Well, you know, the charge phase was what we did first. You know, obviously, that's the way the rules work, unless I'm fucking it up. But yeah, no, so, like I said, though, charge phase, she gets her Wave of Terror thing, and from the way that rule is written, she fights immediately. Like, she gets a free round of combat out of it. This is, if I'm recalling correctly, this is on top of, like, the actual combat in the combat phase. So because of that, my Necropolis stalkers were not able to use the Quadrarch aspect first, which I would have done probably the Blade Parry aspect that allows you to reroll your save rolls. Because instead, I ended up losing a stalker right off the bat, and I think getting another one injured before we've done anything. Then the combat phase begins. She goes, all right, well, that's what's in combat, you know, right now, so we're going to start there. And, you know, that time I had the saves. But, yeah, it just turned into this really nasty, stupid fucking slog of me trying to chop through chain rasps and getting fucking nowhere. She wasn't even healing stuff up left and right. It just, I just was not doing the damage, you know. By the end of the game, I still have one stalker left injured, if I remember correctly. But, that was all the more I had managed to accomplish. So, but yeah, by the very end, Banshees drop down, the Bone Shaper's toast, which I will say the Bone Shaper, for as far as my stuff went, pretty happy with the Bone Shaper. Very, very capable dude. You know, he can heal up units and bring things back from the dead, but it's not a spell or anything. It's just you get to heal up X amount of dudes. End of story. So, yeah, I do think that tactically I could have probably done things a little bit differently. I think I rather than moving the stalkers up, I should have held the stalkers back with the Bone Shaper, holding the objective, move up the Mortec Guard. And have them kind of do their thing. And then maybe once the chain rats are tied up, then go in with the stalkers. The biggest mistake was trying to beeline for Lady O. I highly recommend if you're going up against Night Aunt and going up against Lady O, you want to do one of two things. Or I guess one of three things, depending on whether you have ranged combat or not. But they boil down to the same thing. You either need to get in and kill her now. You gotta, like, end her. Just make sure she is toast as soon as possible. And if you have a bunch of ranged weapons, that increases your odds. But if you're all close combat, which most of an AOS is, you either need to run up and wreck her shit. But that might not be possible if she's screened properly. Or you need to stay the fuck away from her. Like, just ignore her. She is, you know, begone thought. She's not worth your time, basically. She's not. If you try to go for her and get tied up, you are going to get your absolute shit pushed in by the amount, just the absolute fucking dump truck worth of mortal wounds she can pump out. It's not good. It is not pretty. She rolled hot with a lot of her mortal wound stuff too, but still it was just like, holy shit. Like, come on. This is nuts. You know, so yeah, I do think that was a big thing too. In the future with Lady O, if I cannot get at her because she is screened or I don't have range or whatever, you know, you will... She'll tag, you know, it's a board control thing, but still, just fuck it. Give up part of the board, focus on the rest of the shit. Just stay away from her. Unless you can get the drop on her, you know. Don't necessarily keep running away. If she keeps moving herself out and she gets herself into a vulnerable position, then go in for the kill. But if you cannot go in for the kill, don't fucking bother. She's not, nah, she's bad news. So... that's for starters. Just ignore Lady O or destroy her immediately. There's nothing in between. If you sit near her, she's just going to rain her shit all over you and fuck up your whole day. So, now that being said, as a Night Haunt player, if you are Night Haunt, what I would recommend is go ahead and use Lady O, as just an absolute beast assassin with mortal wounds, but B, you can use her, as board denial. That she creates this, you know, exclusion zone around herself of, if you come into this range, I will fuck your shit up and wreck your goddamn life. Don't. You know, don't you're as an opponent to the Night Aunt, don't get into that exclusion zone if you can help it. But as Lady O, you can use that as an opportunity to create a space around you. And it's pretty large. It's like an 18-inch radius, basically. So 36-inch diameter on the board is Lady O controlling the board. You know, that's a pretty substantial effect. I'm going to crunch the numbers here quick now that I think about it. Let's see here. So let's crunch some numbers here. So her radius around her, and this actually doesn't include her base now that I think about it, so I got to keep that in mind. I don't know what size base she's on, though, right off the top of my head. But ignoring her base, this is just to kind of rough it a little bit here. She has that 18, you know what, fuck it, we'll add the base, just a rough estimate, we'll say, if she's on like a 60 millimeter base, you know what, it's time to investigate. Let's see here, Games Workshop's website, usually they tell you it comes on this base. Bear with me here, everybody, now we're on a mission. We're on a mission from GAD. Let's see here. Lady O, Mortark of Grief. Badass model, by the way. If you haven't checked her out before, I highly recommend it. 60 millimeter base. All right. So, she's got a 60 millimeter base. So, 30 millimeters to inches. So, that way we get her radius. 1.1811 inches. Okay. 1.1811 plus her 18-inch range. 19.1811, obviously. Durr. So you take that's the radius of how much of the field she affects, essentially, because there's her space that she takes up, and then it's 18 inches beyond that. So that's the radius, that it affects. So if you want to take the area, the amount of total battlefield that she affects with her mortal wound shit, and like I said, I'm going off of, I think it was 18 inches, if I remember correctly. We take that radius, it's time for a little math lesson. So you take your radius, and you square that, for starters, squared, there we go, boom. Alright, so that's 367.91 blah 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 inches, then we multiply that times pi. So that's 1155.83 so on and so forth inches, okay? So, we could take that number, though, and we can divide that by the size of the battlefield itself to give us a percentage of how much of the battlefield she takes up. So we got 4 feet, which is 48 inches, by 6 feet for standard size table. I will say, when we played our game, it was slightly smaller. I want to say it was like high 30 inches times by like high 50s. So it's a little bit smaller, but either way, 48 times the 72 for the 6 feet. So that means Lady Olander can affect up to 33.44 and a bunch of other numbers. To round it off, we'll just say 33% of the battlefield. She can affect a third of the battlefield with her mortal wounds. And so she can create this denial bubble around herself, you know? So keep that in mind, that here is this one model can affect a third of the battlefield with her capabilities. It's pretty astounding and impressive when you think about how capable she is. Overall, it was a great game. It was great to roll some dice for the first time in a while. It was great to do so with the lovely Krista, my lovely fiance, and it was just fun, even though I got my shit totally wrecked. I will say I was severely disappointed in the performance of the Stalkers. Probably wrong target, I would say, overall. There weren't enough of them, and they weren't able to pump out enough stuff to really do what they needed to do to knock out the chain rest. not certain what I could have necessarily done different with the list, as it was, I should say. But I think I could have definitely done some different things as far as tactics goes, to some degree. I do feel like the list is just very ineffectual as well against a horde. It can't compete to a horde. You just don't have the bodies, you know, to deal with it. But, yeah, overall, I was severely disappointed in the performance of the Bone Reapers. And very, you know, once again, she's played a lot less Warhammer in general than I have. Just watching her play, you know, we both stumbled through it a little bit because it had been a while for both of us. And her, she really just needs more confidence in herself. She's actually done very well in games she's played and stuff before. I know some people probably maybe to some degree have gone a little bit easy just to try and teach her new things. But I think out of all the games she's played, she's only lost once. Against other people, I should say. Against me, I would say it's been pretty 50-50 actually when we've played. Now that I think about it. Yeah. You know, my Maggotkin have wrecked her, I think a couple times. When I tried Blades of Khorne, I got wrecked, and then Bone Reapers is probably the worst performance I've done. Blades of Khorne, that situation was really bad, but a lot of that too had to do with really shit dice. This, I would say, just overall, I was like, I made some serious tactical errors. Some of them just out of inexperience of what Lady O could actually do. And some of it just new army stuff. But yeah, so. But overall, it was great fun. So, I'm looking forward to doing so some more. I'm hoping I can get my hands on those models before, you know, in time. So I can have them at least built up for that tournament. If not, I do hope that we still end up going in some capacity to do so. So, but let's go ahead. I'm going to take a short little break here. When I come back, we're going to go ahead and go over some of the stuff in the Adeptus Sororitas book. Once again, not going full deep dive here because I just really couldn't do it justice. But we're going to cover a little bit of it before this episode's done. So stay tuned.
You're listening to The Regimental Vox. Follow The Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/TheRegimentalVox today.
And welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, we're not going to, you know, deep dive into the whole rest of the code. Basically, originally, my plan was, all right, I'm going to kind of try to go through, you know, all these units and do all this other stuff and blah, blah, blah. But I felt like in the time I had available today that I couldn't do it the honest justice it deserves by trying to, like, crash course through all of the rest of the book that we didn't cover last week. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to discuss relics specifically, the rest of the relics and stuff. And I realized I think I actually missed one last week when we went over the order specific ones. But yeah, I wanted to go over the relics and the warlord traits, if possible, here today. So, but we'll start with the warlord traits as far as the general, once again, the non-order specific ones. I will say right up front, name characters and warlord traits. If you have Celestine as your warlord, she will have Beacon of Faith. If you have Junith Iruda, Fruta, Muda Buddha, whatever her goddamn name is, Judge Junith, she has Inspiring Orator. And then if you have the Triumph of St. Catherine, you have Pure of Will. Speaking of me stumbling over my words, just wanted to point out, or rather mention something that was pointed out to me, that I want to apologize to anybody who's been listening to this podcast and gritting their teeth. It is not Adeptus Sororitas. I have been mispronouncing it this whole time. It is Adepta Sororitas. And I apologize greatly and deeply. I'm willing to call myself on my own shit, as after my fiance had, she had sent me voice clips through Facebook Messenger while she was driving one day to say, "Hey, jackass, I was listening to your podcast and you done fucked up now." No, she was far more polite than that. But it was like, oh, fuck. The moment she even said sororitas, my brain went, that's Latin. Even before she, and then she ended up telling me, you know, it's Latin and it means sisterhood, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, ah, son of a bitch. My brain went sororitas because of senoritas. But that's Spanish. That's not Latin. And Warhammer is not Mexico's in space. It's Catholic Nazis in space. Yeah. Anywho, I just wanted to apologize for that. I sounded like an idiot, and I'm willing to accept that. Now the problem is, though, I've been saying it wrong for so long that my brain does not want to automatically go Adepta Sororitas. So, but anywho, let's get into the Warlord traits here. For starters, we've got Inspiriting, and oh my god, Inspiriting again. I don't know why I'm saying that, because that is not, no. That's just flat out, I'm just fucking up. Inspiring Orator. Add one to this Warlord's leadership character. Now is it Orator or is it Orator? Orator. Oh, god damn it. Anywho, add one to this Warlord's leadership characteristic. Friendly Orator units can use this Warlord's leadership characteristic instead of their own whilst they are within 6 inches of this Warlord. Fucking terrible. Garbage. Hot garbage. You know, leadership doesn't affect things that much. And this book has a lot of different ways to overcome leadership issues anyways. It's just not that great. Righteous Rage. When making a charge roll for this Warlord, you can reroll any or all of the dice when resolving an attack made with a melee weapon by this Warlord in a turn in which this Warlord made a charge move, was charged and performed a heroic intervention. You can reroll the wound roll. Not bad, but not great. This book is like, there's so many different ways you could build a canoness where she is like half a step from being, you know, a smash captain that just happens to be a lady. You know, that's just, she's really, really, really capable. There's a lot of cool gear and everything else, but just doesn't quite make that mark, which is part of why this doesn't entirely work crazy well. You know, I'm thinking when I get to kind of custom build a canoness and stuff, I think I'm going to try and actually focus on making the best Smash Captain style one I can to some degree. If you could put a jump pack on her, oof, the things you can do. Next we have Executioner of Heretics. Subtract one from the leadership characteristic of enemy units whilst they're within 6 inches of this Warlord. Hot garbage, dumpster fire, just nope, fuck it. Beacon of Faith. At the start of your turn, if this Warlord is on the battlefield, you gain one miracle dice. That's not terrible, but it's not great because there's a lot of ways, once again, kind of like with the when I mentioned the inspiriting again. Holy fuck. What the hell? Inspiring Orator thing. There's so many ways to do that in the book already that the, you know, gaining one extra miracle dice isn't as big of a deal. It's not terrible though. Having them is certainly useful. Then we have Indomitable Belief. The invulnerable save friendly order infantry models received from the Shield of Faith ability is improved by one to a maximum of four up whilst their unit is within 6 inches of this Warlord. That's good. That is nice. You're talking about having a five up invul pretty regularly for everybody that's around your Warlord. I think that is definitely a good thing. And then lastly, we have Pure of Will. This warlord can attempt to deny one additional psychic power in your opponent's psychic phase, as described in the Shield of Faith ability. Subtract one from psychic tests taken from enemy models whilst they're within 12 inches of this warlord. Situational, it's not a terrible thing. I think Indomitable Belief is just too fucking good in comparison, though. But if you're going up against someone who's very psyker-heavy, it might be a wise decision to roll with Pure of Will. You know, in the grand scheme of things here, as far as looking at both the regular warlord traits and the order warlord traits as a whole, I would say that overall, now that I'm thinking about it, I think overall Indomitable Belief is probably the most useful by far. It's just too useful to affect that many people. The rest of the warlord traits are very focused on improving the warlord and only the warlord. And as I mentioned before on many episodes, I do not like traits and relics generally that only make the warlord themselves better. I prefer things that provide a boost for everybody, especially in the case of aura stuff, because with aura stuff, that's going to affect the warlord too. You know, you're within range of your own auras and shit. So, yeah, that would definitely improve the warlord as well. I'm just double checking here. So, just the Indomitable Belief, though, admittedly, a canonist already has a 4-up invuln, and since it's a maximum 4-up, that does not change them. But still, good to have all the same. So, now, we'll quickly go over some of the relic stuff, then we're going to probably wrap this episode up for today. Which as a note, not only did I delete the episode and start over, I actually changed my quote of the day even, because, the quote that I had for this episode. I was going to do a Sisters of Battle one specifically, decided to go with the thought for the day. A broad mind lacks focus because of the fact that I couldn't really, it's too big of a topic, trying to shove it into too small of a time, couldn't really do it justice. Even now I feel like I'm kind of wishy-washy, and I do apologize if you guys agree with that. You know, if you guys have any other better suggestions and stuff, as always, hit up Facebook, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. You know, I ask that you be constructive in your criticism, that's all. So, going into the relics. We already went over the order relics, minus one. I don't believe we went over this one, because I'm pretty certain we didn't go over this one. It is because it's the only one on the one of the pages. The Casket of Penance. Order of the Valorous Heart model only. Subtract one from the toughness characteristic of enemy units whilst they're within 1 inch of a model from your army with this relic. That's pretty good, actually. I won't lie. Being able to make your opponent lower his toughness. I've had many situations with my Skitarii Vanguard with the rad saturation rule and stuff, where I went from this is going to be a tough fight to I've got the upper hand now. Even up against orcs, you know, like just this species that's meant to just murder like the shit out of everything in close combat, and boom, you get neg one toughness. Now you're toughness 3, as opposed to me having to get 5s, I only need 4s. When you double that up with, I think it's the Griah trait, yeah, the emotionless clarity for the warlord, your dudes that are near him can shoot their assault and rapid fire weapons, kind of like they were pistols. You can shoot them even if you're locked in combat. So, yeah, there's a lot of advantages there. A lot of advantages. So, but let's continue on. Going back to the beginning of the page here, going to the standard relics, Blade of Admonition. Admonition. Blade of Admonition. Why can I not? I can't English lately. Model equipped with a blessed blade only, or Latin apparently. This relic replaces a blessed blade and has the following profile. It's range, type, melee, obviously. Strength +2, AP -3, And 3 damage. Let me find the blessed blade here quick, just so that we have that. Plus 2 strength, neg 3 AP, D3 damage. So basically, it's the same thing, but you get reliable damage. You're no longer D3, you are 3 damage. Pretty good. It goes kind of back to that Smash Captain-y type thing. But once again, there's nobody in this book that is really that good. They're not terrible in combat. They're just so close to being amazing. But not a bad choice if you're going combat heavy on your on your warlord. Or it doesn't have to necessarily be the warlord, but you know what I mean. Then we have the Brazier of Eternal Flame, model with the Brazier of Holy Fire only. This relic replaced the Brazier of Holy Fire. When a psychic test is taken for an enemy model within 18 inches of a model from your army with this relic, subtract 2 from the result. Which actually then I am curious because of the wording there. Let's see here. Because it says it replaces the Brazier of Holy Fire. So I would say that, yeah, the Holy Fire Brazier doesn't do any of the other shit that it does. You know, because the Brazier of Holy Fire typically does the, you subtract leadership from demon units. Once per battle, you can fire Overwatch and unleash the flames and so on and so forth. So it just doesn't do any of that stuff yet. So that's kind of different. Usually a relic is like an upgraded version of the same thing, but this is literally just saying, nope, it does a completely different thing now. Super mega situational. If you had the Brazier of Holy Flame, of Holy Fire, which in and of itself has some situational rules, but does have some actual value too beyond that. I would say, yeah, now, probably not, unless you, like I said, unless you're in a situation where you are just facing off Magnus and shit, or whatever, you need to make sure you get the best, a best possible opportunity to ignore, to either deny the witch or just have your enemy fail their psychic tests and shit, then okay, but. Wrath of the Emperor, it's a bolt pistol replacement. So, and obviously, most people should be fully familiar with the nature of bolt pistols. But just to make sure it's clear, bolt pistols are 12-inch pistol 1, strength 4, no AP, 1 damage. This is 18-inch range, so, alright, so 50% extra range. Pistol 4, strength 5, neg 2, 2 damage. That's nothing really to scoff at when you figure that, like, a heavy bolter, for example, is only 3 shots at strength 5, neg 1, 1 damage. This, it's shorter, much shorter range than a heavy bolter, but it's actually far more capable than a heavy bolter. So if you're really going, total bolter build, heavy bolters and all that shenanigans, this would not be a terrible choice. Since it's a pistol too, if you're locked in combat on your shooting phase, you can, unload that shit. Point blank range, heavy bolter fire. That's actually better than heavy bolter fire. 1 extra shot, 1 extra AP, 1 extra damage than a heavy bolter. I'm honestly impressed with this one. I really am. Once again, I'm not usually a big fan of things that only affect the warlord. But this is a good choice. But there are better choices is the biggest thing. Moving on, though. Litanies of Faith. Once per turn, if a model from your army with this relic is on the battlefield, when you gain a miracle dice, you can re-roll that dice. So it's once per turn. If your battle plan is very miracle dice focused, then that's not a bad choice. I think relying on the miracle dice to be your ace in the hole is not the best move, but yeah. Mantle of Ophelia, canonist model only. A model with this relic is a 3-up invuln save. All right, that's pretty nice. Improving that 4-up to a 3-up, that relish 3-up is definitely a really nice thing. Once again, there's some other choices though that I think might be better, but it's a good one for sure. Then we got Triptych of the Makarian Crusade. When a model with this relic would lose a wound, roll 1d6. On a 5-up, that wound is not lost. Feel no pains are great, but depending on the order you're already rocking and stuff like that, there are other ways to get your feel no pains in play all the same. So, yeah, Valorous Heart has on a 6, but if you're already rolling Valorous Heart, you could might be able to just get better results by doing things to decrease your odds of being wounded. So then we have the Book of St. Lucius. Add 3 inches to the range of the aura abilities of a model with this relic. Totally dependent on which model you're putting it on, you want to make a good choice, but aura abilities and extending them out an extra 3 inches, consider the average aura abilities like 6 to 9, that's pretty good. So the Iron Surplice, Surplice, Serp and Lice, I don't know, of St. Estela. We talked about this one last week. This, in my opinion, is probably your best choice overall. It's a model with this relic, has a save characteristic of 2-up, so boom, 2-up armor save. And in addition, when resolving an attack made against that model, an unmodified wound roll of 1, 2, or 3 always fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or the model making that attack may have. So if you roll a 1, 2, or 3, even if they have some crazy-ass ability that says, we get a plus 1,000 sort of thing. Nope, you rolled a 3, you fail. I feel like this, when you like on a canonist, you're looking at then a 2-up armor save, 4++ for your invuln there. You only get wounded in the first place on 4s or better, so you only have a 50% chance. So even if somebody, you know, on Chaos Knight just tries to wipe you off the fucking map, okay, cool story, bro, but I'm still standing. This is far and above the most powerful, in my opinion. So the rest of the relics are ones that we went over last week. Yeah, it's actually really weird the way this book is written. The rest of the relics that are here are all the order ones. It's just that one random one that they put on a separate page. I don't know if that was a conscious choice or a mistake with the way the book was written. It's just kind of weird. That's why I missed it last week. By far, I think the Iron Surplice is probably the best choice. I think that, honestly, that Wrath of the Emperor pistol, that's nothing to scoff at, to be perfectly honest. But I just think at the end of the day, having, you know, a 2-up, 4-up with ignoring all wounds of 1, 2, or 3 is pretty intense. Now, as always, with relics, warlord traits, and stuff like that, it's going to be totally dependent on the build you're going for. I feel like overall, I'm a little disappointed by the amount of relics and traits in this book that are purely focused on making the warlord better. Or, in the case of relics, whatever character gets the relic better. That there's not a ton of stuff for auras and improving the army as a whole. But there are a few things here and there. But that Iron Surplice thing is just way too good to ignore. That is, whew, that's ridiculous. But like I said, the Wrath of the Emperor bolt pistol, I mean, once again, yeah, it's half the range, but you have 4 shots as opposed to 3, same strength, extra AP, extra damage. That thing, yeah, you're definitely more likely to do a lot more hurt throughout the game with that versus the heavy bolter, if you're getting close enough. Which, with the Sisters of Battle, Adepta Sororitas army, you are going to be getting really close, because you probably have a shit ton of Meltas, a shit ton of Flamers, and so on and so forth. So, but I'm going to call that a call here. Let me know what you guys think, what your thoughts are on the warlord traits and relics and stuff, and on those order traits we talked about last week. You know, I'm curious to see what other people are thinking, are their best choices and builds and stuff overall. So, but yeah, you can hit me up on the Facebook, facebook.com/the Regimental Vox podcast. You can go to Twitter, follow me at Regimental Vox. And then on Patreon, patreon.com/theregimentalvox, to donate, help me out and shit. So, and as always, if you need shit painted up, you can go facebook.com/dangerclosepaintingstudio. Hit my brother and I up, and we will see what we can arrange for you. So, but that is it for today. I will catch you all on the next episode. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.